Earlier this year, author Kia Wilson's novel We Eat Our Own was published. It's a horror novel that the New York Times reviewed as being canny, funny, and impressively detailed. Wilson, who's also the events coordinator at Left Bank Books, talked with contributor Steve Potter in November.
We Eat Our Own is Kia Wilson's first novel. Congratulations on that, Kia.
Thank you.
Now, you sell books for a living here in St. Louis, and now you've had a book published by Simon & Schuster. So how long has that been a dream for you?
It's been my dream since I was a child. As long as I can remember, I've always had the privilege of parents who encouraged me to read and write. And I don't remember a time I didn't want to do this, not necessarily to write a book about horror movies, but that's where I ended up.
Did you attempt to write anything when you were younger?
All the time, yeah. I don't remember a time when I wasn't reading and writing.
Are those things, have those been saved? Or are they long gone?
Most of them have been intentionally destroyed.
I mentioned the name of your publisher to make a point, and that is that this is not a self-published book, which is a pretty big deal for someone of your age and experience.
Thank you very much. Yeah, the team at Simon & Schuster and the imprint that I'm with, specifically Scribner, have been incredible. I couldn't have asked for a better team.
Without going into too much detail, I'm just so curious how you made that happen. How a girl who lives in St. Louis and has never written a book before gets a deal.
Well, I attended the MFA program at Washington University here in St. Louis. If your listeners don't know what an MFA program is, it stands for Master of Fine Arts. A lot of people don't realize that there are about 50 fully funded programs out there in the country for creative writing at the graduate level. By fully funded, I mean they pay you to do them. You don't pay any kind of tuition. And WashU is one of them. And I had the most incredible support there. If anyone's considering applying to a writing program, I couldn't recommend that one more highly. And they connected me not only with the resources I need to learn how to research a book. This book is set in the 1970s, and I had absolutely no research skills when I went into the program. But then ultimately to develop it into a novel-length work and then connect with an agent through the program and then ultimately sell it and publish it.
Well, We Eat Our Own is a wild ride.
Thank you.
There was a film, though, that sort of inspired all this for you at one time.
Absolutely. So the book is very, very loosely based on the making of a film called Cannibal Holocaust, which was known and is still known as a notorious Mondo film. If you don't know what a Mondo film is, it's a specific kind of mostly Italian horror film in the 70s and 80s that tries to use real events to make you scared in a different way than most horror films make you feel afraid. The example that a lot of people like to draw on is the Blair Witch Project, which is very, very famous as sort of launching the found footage genre. Cannibal Holocaust actually launched it about 20 years before that, and for reasons you'll find out, has not been as widely seen as Blair Witch. It is about the making of it's different in my book, but the actual film is about the making of a documentary about a group of cannibals in the middle of the Amazon rainforest, and the documentary filmmaking crew has gone missing in the jungle. That's the same as in my book. But the twist is that Cannibal Holocaust was marketed as found footage, as a reel of film that had been scraped off the jungle floor, and it was actual footage of not actors, but in fact real documentarians who had been killed. And it was convincing enough in terms of the marketing plan and also the special effects that the director was actually brought up on obscenity charges for making a snuff film.
Wow.
And that is the premise of my book, draws from that and takes it in very different directions.
Was Cannibal Holocaust a good film?
Depends on what you mean by good. It was actually the highest grossing film in Japan under E.T. that year. As you can guess, it was banned in a number of countries because of it was so graphic and because it was so controversial. But I think to the average horror film, it's a formative and important film that is really shaped a genre that endures very much to this day.
So were you interested in horror films when you were young? Is that where this came from?
Oh, yes. I have been a watcher of horror films for almost as long as I can remember. I fell in love with them through, you know, Hitchcock and the things that are seen as not exactly horror films, but with more of an artistic bent. But what I loved about them was horror. And graduated to watching pretty much any film, good or bad, that I could get my hands on. I'm fascinated with it as a
Some horror genre. Films are just gory, but you mentioned Hitchcock, and there's a psychological element there. Is that what interested you, that part of it?
In part. I do like the gore, too. and more to the point, I'm interested in why I like the gore. That's why I watch these films. I think there's something interesting to explore about humans' desire to watch violence enacted in all kinds of genres, not just horror. And I find that the more you watch horror films, the more you can see that directors are wrestling with that question. There's a sort of meta element to how horror film directors make these movies and the way they explore your impulse to watch. That's endlessly interesting to me.
And it's not just the violence, correct? It's our reaction to the violence, mm-hmm. which is part of the equation?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Well, We Eat Our Own begins in 1979 when the struggling New York actor gets a phone call out of the blue from his agent.
It does, yeah. Would you like me to read that passage? That might be a good...
This would be page one.
It would. You get the call during a rainstorm. It is 1979. Your agent doesn't have offers like this for you often. 6 weeks at $217 a week to fill in for a guy who has just quit the production of an Italian art film with American characters that's shooting right now in the Amazon rainforest somewhere in, I don't know, Brazil or Colombia or Peru, but don't worry about that. We're talking good odds on European and American distribution here. We're talking international exposure here, and we're not even talking supporting cast here, guy. This is the lead role. Plus, the script's in English. Plus, they've already seen your 8x10. And did I mention it's an art film? Because God knows I've heard enough already about how much you need to be doing art films. Even if that commercial I got for you would have paid SAG union rates. But you know what? Never mind now. It's water under the bridge. It's water under the bridge because we have got this. We have already got this. If you would just get yourself up and out that door and onto the train and make it down to this address for a screen test right now. I mean it, kid. Right now or not at all. Yes, I said the Amazon rainforest. Colombia, that's it, I remember now. No, I don't know anything else about the part. Yes, I said $217 a week, 6 weeks, do the math on the train. Pack a suitcase. You may not have time to go back to your apartment. The plane to Bogota leaves in 6 hours.
That's Kia Wilson reading from her first novel, We Eat Our Own. So the kid's desperate. He needs a job. He's living in a studio apartment with his girlfriend. So he just takes off?
He does. And I mentioned that this was loosely based on a real film. It's also very loosely based on the making of a real film. And this is an exaggerated version of something that the lead actor in Cannibal Holocaust actually did. He didn't totally understand that what he was getting into was a horror movie. He thought it was going to be more of an art film. I've trumped that up a little bit in my version. But I was very interested in why on earth someone would do this. That was my entry point into the book.
Well, just for the job, right? To chase the dream?
Yeah, but why is his dream that important to him? Like, what kind of person would not only have that level of ambition, but leave everything behind, put himself in he doesn't even know what circumstance, fly to a foreign country, to a town he doesn't even know the name of, to do something like this? I was dying to know, so I wrote a character and let him tell me.
Well, you call him Richard, but that's not his real name.
Yes. So you may not have even caught it when I was reading, but Richard is referred to as you throughout the book. It's addressed to the reader, and I try to put the reader in the story. And Richard is actually the name of his character in the movie, and as part of the director's sort of immersive style, everyone refers to him by his character's name. His real name is sort of stripped from him. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see how that made the reader feel to be told that their name was something else.
So when he finally gets her and he's on set, it's sort of crazy. I mean, he's not able to communicate with most people, either people on set or other actors, because most of them, or maybe all of them, don't even speak English.
A lot of them are speaking Italian, yeah. And even the ones that do speak English are not being very forthcoming with him about what they're up to.
Who are some of the really key characters besides Richard? There's a plot line involving a guy with a guerrilla group. There's an American expat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when Richard arrives in this town, which is called Ovidio, he doesn't learn it very quickly, but you, the reader, will learn this, that the town is a little bit more complex than it seems. It is sitting on the Amazon River. It is only accessible by plane, and planes come every 2 weeks, or by boat, which would take months to navigate and would be very dangerous. And this entire town has everything shipped in order to accommodate life there. And the person who put this crazy operation together is an American guy named Hank Vance. And what becomes clear as you read is that the way he gets the money to make this town function might not be on the up and up. And as you go through, you meet the guerrilla groups that he collaborates with, a cartel that he's collaborating with. It's not giving away too much to say that there's some illegal dealings that will have some consequences.
And some gory things that go on.
Absolutely. So the gore that you might be anticipating at the beginning of the book, or that the actor starts to anticipate when he realizes is in a horror film, are nothing compared to the actual violence that is the backdrop.
Talk just a little bit about that thin line you have in your book where fact and fiction sort of come together and you're not sure which is which.
So one major character in the book who I haven't mentioned very much is the director of this film.
Right.
He's a guy named Ugo Velluto. And it's slowly revealed throughout the book that Ugo did not have to bring all of his actors down to the middle of the Amazon rainforest to make a cheesy slasher cannibal film. He's, in fact, shot multiple films on soundstages in Italy where he's spritzed the actors down with water to simulate sweat and carted in a couple of trained monkeys and called it a day. But he is interested in blurring that line between reality and simulation. And the reader is meant to ask, how far will he go to blur that line? Part of what he does is he addresses you, the actor, Richard. He directs you in such a way that you don't really know if something violent might actually happen to you, if you might be asked to perform real violence. And I wanted to play with that tension, not just in the making of the film, but in all of the characters throughout.
Uh-huh. Kia, there's that old adage that a writer writes what they know about.
Yeah.
So I know you grew up in Ohio and
yep.
You live here in now St. Louis. So what do you know about all this?
Well, that was a question I had to wrestle with. And I think all writers have to wrestle with when they're writing something that's outside of their experience. The parts of this story that are inside my experience have to do with horror movies. That's my native land in a lot of ways. I've watched them for almost as long as I can remember. I've thought about them critically for almost as long as I can remember. But I've never been to the Amazon rainforest. I have never been to the nation of Colombia. What I had to do was do an enormous amount of research. And then I had to go to my mentors and to people who had been to these areas and ask them a lot of questions. And ultimately, I had to get permission from people I trusted to say the version of these places that you made, which I will say that this is not the real Colombia, and the town that I invented, I made up a name for it because it's a made up town, is a territory in my imagination more than it's a real place.
Let's talk about a real place, though, because there are references, maybe directly or indirectly, that do tie back here to St. Louis. I noticed one, you talk about a Hotel Ignacio, which is that a coincidence that we
nope.
have one here?
That was inspired. I like the name.
And I think the violence in Ferguson played a part in your thought process. How did that work?
Absolutely. I wouldn't say that it is in the story in any overt way, but it shaped how I was thinking about the core questions of the book. So as we've been talking about, I was interested in the difference between simulated violence and real violence. And I had to think about what real violence meant. And midway through revising this book, the Ferguson protests happened. I was working at Left Bank at the time. The store took a very public stance on those protests and invited a lot of really, really painful and vigorous and vital conversations about revolutionary movements, about violence in our communities, and what those things meant from many, many perspectives. And what I found kind of to my surprise is that the revolutionary movements of Colombia ended up making their way into the story in a way that I hadn't experienced. And thinking about, back to that question of how do you write what you know, I found that as someone who is not a good protester, has never really been most effective in that capacity. I'm not loud, but I want to be an ally. What I could talk about a little bit more confidently was the trauma that attends revolutions, and specifically how it feels to negotiate questions of how do you fight violently for it, sometimes for a nonviolent cause. How do you fight nonviolently against violence? Those questions of how we navigate ethically, what the right thing to do is versus who we are. Those were very present in both my life in St. Louis and in my life in the book.
We eat our own. What's the significance of the title to you?
That's a challenging thing. I hope it has many significances. It does for me. The movie within my movie is about cannibalism. There isn't any actual cannibalism in the book. Don't let that scare you off. And I want to say that
it's kind of borderline.
So. Not quite. But I do want to say that people who aren't readers or watchers of horror movies, I hope they feel invited to read this book. It's a work of literary fiction to me, and it's very important to me. Cannibalism became a metaphor for me for how we treat other people, how we sometimes utilize other people, even when we don't necessarily view what we're doing as violence, even when we don't mean to cause any kind of harm, when someone becomes nourishment for us rather than a person. Hmm. And that title came out of many, many, many rounds of false titles with my editor and my agent. And when it stuck, it stuck. And I've had some really great conversations about what that title means to other people, too.
I know it must be very exciting for you to have your first novel in the bookstore
yeah,
where you work. So an idea for novel number two?
Absolutely, always. I'm writing a book right now. Well, it's nascent, so this might all change, but it's about utopias. It's about, it's set in New Mexico, where I spent a lot of time, and it's about a group of people that are creating a community within a country and what the consequences of that might be. That's about all I can say for now.
Well, Kia, you have a way with words, both in person and in print. Thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
That's contributor Steve Potter talking with St. Louis author Kia Wilson. Wilson's debut novel is called We Eat Our Own. It's published earlier this year by Scribner, an imprint of Simon & Schuster. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.